Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is another two-hour radio broadcast through BBS Radio. I work under the logo of Zero Point, and that is a term that has a profound mystical occult significance, this concept of a zero point. And yeah, I find ideas about zero points in varied esoteric literature. You find it in Kabbalistic teachings, and you find it in Sufi teachings. You find it in the secret doctrine of Blavatsky. You find it in Aleister Crowley and elsewhere. So the concept of a zero point is that any living being has what we might call a zero point center. And this zero point center, I would say, is associated with the physics and the higher dimensional physics of the human heart. So there's actually a science to higher states and afterlife and such and other planes, but there's actual higher dimensional physics to the human heart. And that human beings have a hidden self, which generally people do not know. So the mystics always describe mankind as living in ignorance of self. In the Vedic teachings, this is said, you're said to be under the mode of ignorance, the mode of Thomas. And that's portrayed by the statue of Shiva standing on a little figure who's called the dwarf of ignorance. So those of us who do not know ourselves, we're called the dwarfs of ignorance. And the idea in mystical and esoteric teachings is that we have to, or we can, strive to attain to the realization of these deeper dimensions to ourselves. My main writings, most important book, is called The Heart Doctrine, Mystical Views of the Origin and Nature of Human Consciousness. And in it, I begin by explaining how in modern science, all the scientists and psychologists and neurologists have assumed that the material brain in the head produces human consciousness. So that when a human being dies, well, the brain breaks down and it doesn't, the neurons don't fire anymore, so consciousness must disappear. And that's been the main dogma of the past century of academic science and psychology. And that goes along with the idea that a human being has no spiritual or soul nature. Because if there's validity to mystical and spiritual and esoteric ideas, then human consciousness really originates out of the dimensions of the heart, not of the mind in the head. And consciousness is something beyond the material body. That somehow there is a self, an I, that inhabits the body. There's a living entity in the body. And the body is like its temple. Okay, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, I am the self seated in the hearts of all living beings. And it is said within the heart is the access of the individual to the Lord or to God, to Lord Krishna is within the heart. But that is the Paramatma, the great cosmic soul. But also within the heart is said to be the Jiva Atma, the individual self. And whereas the Paramatma is said to be infinite, the individual self is said to be infinitesimal. It's like a spark thrown off from this living fire. So it's like there's these divine sparks, or sparks of holiness, they're called in Kabbalah. And so there's this, Shirley MacLaine refers to the idea of there being a God spark within each person. So in a way, your zero point center is your God spark. Aleister Crowley says, every man and every woman is a star. And he says that is the first principle of magic. So then what we have to do is attain to this realization of this star within ourselves. So in mystical ideas, the main emphasis is on human consciousness and the I experience originating out of the heart. And when we're in the body, this consciousness and life, it circulates through the blood, through the body. So I can be conscious in my feet through my blood. Okay, and we can be conscious through our body, through our blood. If I put my awareness in my hand, then the blood flows into my hand. Consciousness is connected to blood flow in the body. And it's also related to the subtle energies in the subtle bodies. So in mystical teachings, consciousness is related more to the heart and to the flow of blood within the body. If a person loses blood flow to the head, they lose consciousness. They would faint. Or if you cut off the blood flow to an arm, that arm goes numb and you can't feel it. See, you cut off the blood flow and you cut off the consciousness. So mystical teachings also, consciousness is like light, and light illuminates us and allows us to be aware of things. So we might have more or less of this light. We might live in outer darkness because of all our attachments to things in life and our worries and concerns and problems and negative states and so on. And we're lost in life and controlled and conditioned by all that life bears, how life bears upon us. So the idea in mystical teachings is we have, through our lives, we want to attain to our souls. Gurdjieff says a soul isn't just given to a person, but you have to attain your soul. And you have to do this by striving towards your own self-perfection in terms of being, is Gurdjieff's term, for striving for towards our own self-perfection. And Gurdjieff relates this to the awakening of the higher emotional center, which I would say is the human heart. So the awakening of consciousness and the heart is a way towards the next step in the evolution of humankind on this planet. You see, as it is now, people are said to be ruled by the three lower centers, which are related to the motives of money, sex, and power. Money and material gain, and then sex, sexuality, and sociality, and then power. Money, sex, and power. And you see all the criminality of the governments and what takes place on the world stage. It's all about these money, sex, and power. And the people who perpetrate these things, in a way, they don't attain to the level of the awakening of the heart, because then they would feel compassion or love towards other people. And if a person feels genuine compassion and love, it's not a discriminating thing. It's like the more you feel of it, you can feel it towards everybody. So there's awakening of the human heart, but what happens is people become more and more contracted about the heart, and they lose this essential heart feeling. So in life, what we need, in a way, is what Gurdjieff describes as a second education. That helps us overcome the conditioning of the mind and the habits of our personality to get back to our essential nature. In the Gurdjieff work, we struggle with negative emotions, trying to free ourselves of negative emotions as much as we can just because they're a waste of time and unnecessary. So the more you're freer of those, it's like being free of attachments and identifications. And the more you're free of attachments and identifications, then the closer you are to your essential nature. So the mystical path, in a way, we try to understand consciousness not only theoretically and scientifically, but we have to try to understand it within ourselves, because the only way to understand consciousness is within yourself. You can't just understand it as an intellectual idea or simply in words. One has to understand it through one's own self-experience. So the zero point show over the, this is almost the end of the fourth year of our programming through BBS, and we explore the heart doctrine, we explore the ideas about modern physics and ancient metaphysics, creation science, and then problems happening in the world and the events taking place on the world stage. Okay, I'm going to bring in my co-host in a moment, and then in the second hour of the show, I'm hoping we'll have a phone-in guest, who is Kevin Nanette, who's been on this show several times previously. Okay, Jim, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you, Chris?
Okay, good. I'm sitting here. I'm doing a radio broadcast from the new Zero Point Institute here in Kempville. I've got the office space and the main space set up quite nicely now, Jim. Really settled in here.
Yeah, when did you move?
I moved the first of the month, of February.
Yeah. Good. Nice.
But see, after. I had a fire, for those listeners who don't know. I had lost my home and possessions last summer in a house fire. And so when I moved in, I had hardly anything, Jim. I had fitted everything in a van. So I've been out going to used stores, and I went to the auction last night and, you know, got more bookcases in than desks and carpets and couches and things, and the place is really quite nice. I'm very pleased with it.
Well, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big enough space that I want to get back to teaching publicly again, because the last time I did that was when I was in New Zealand for 5 months, and I did a lot of public speaking. But since being back in the Ottawa area, I haven't done any of that over the last 2 years.
How long ago was it when you were in New Zealand? Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, it was 2 years ago now. Came back at this time of the year, early March.
That went fast. It seems like, I wouldn't have thought it was 2 years ago. But now that I think about it, I realize, okay. Wow.
Yeah, it seems long, far away now, more to me. Yeah, lots happened since then. So I've decided I hope you're going to be able to make our opening at the Zero Point Center, because I want to open it on March 21st of this year, because that's the spring equinox.
Equinox, yes, yeah.
And what I'm going to do is just have an open house from 2 to 8 o'clock that day.
Oh, yeah.
And at some point we'll have some more formal kind of you know, if you'd say something and I'd say something and maybe a couple other people, and we'd have a kind of some ceremony.
Is that on the weekend, the 21st?
That's on the Sunday.
Oh, it's on the Sunday. Okay.
Yeah, so I thought that could work out, kind of do a Sunday afternoon into early evening.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah.
I'll be there for sure, yeah. That'll be fun. Yeah, I look forward to that.
Do you want to go ahead, Jim?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, recently you talked about the heart doctrine, and then I've just recently been rereading your book, God, Science, and the Secret Doctrine. I'm writing this book, The Problem of God's Contracting Universe, sort of outlining the history of your work and the evolution of your model of consciousness, and using that to discuss the question of the existence of God or non-existence of God, and to explore that question from the perspective of esoteric studies on consciousness and esoteric teachings, and how they contrast with modern and compare with modern science, and just to try to provide an overview of the whole question from an esoteric perspective, and mystical perspective, which I think provides a very different viewpoint from that which is commonly applied when discussing science versus religion, or the existence of God, or the non-existence of God. I had read the book before, and I've read it in different parts, and I read it completely before, but rereading it, I was very impressed by the extent that to which you amplify on various material that appears in the Secret Doctrine, and how you amplify on that and explain that in terms of the most recent developments in modern physics and major questions and enigmas and mysteries in modern physics. It's a very, very interesting discussion. It's particularly interesting when you combine it with your book, The Heart Doctrine, and the perspective which you briefly touched on at the beginning of this program about this idea that we have this God spark within us, this infinitesimally small point within the human heart, which is connected to the higher dimensional physics and metaphysics of the human heart, and how these ideas appear throughout the esoteric and mystical tradition. But I think that the very interesting part in the Secret Doctrine book is how Blavatsky was writing about material in 1888, which is derived from the entire esoteric tradition. Some of these ideas are thousands of years old. It's really quite amazing to consider how the modern physics has come to ideas which are really quite compatible with what Blavatsky was saying in 1888, and what people have been saying within the mystical tradition for hundreds and even thousands of years. And the connection, the linkage is through the examination of what esoteric and mystical teachings teach about the nature of human consciousness and how it's possible to transform the nature of knowing so that you can know these higher dimensional aspects of reality which are invisible to us in our normal waking consciousness. So overall, I think your work is really quite unique, and it's not quite unique, it is unique in the sense that how you tie this idea of the zero point, which is recognized within modern physics and ancient esoteric teachings, but how you tie it on both the level of physical reality and the human heart and human consciousness. I don't think anybody else really discusses that in any detail, certainly not to the extent that you do, and I don't think people really recognize how this could be really a huge breakthrough in our understanding of the nature of consciousness. Now, whether or not it's right is another matter, but I think it's so entirely consistent with esoteric teachings and mystical teachings throughout the ages. There's nothing in your model where I could point to and say, well, that's completely incomprehensible or it's illogical or you know, you're just making this up. I don't get that sense at all when I read it. It's entirely consistent. So very, very, very interesting work. My struggle is that I have to try to reduce all of this to a few chapters. It's very, very difficult. And so I'm really sort of giving the Coles Notes or the Cliff's Notes version of the overview and the extrapolation of the essential elements, which in and of itself is quite provocative to just identify the central elements. But there's so much more to it. That's what I've gotten out of this second reading of the Secret Doctrine. It's a bit overwhelming at times, but very, very provocative, very intriguing.
Yeah, it's one of those books you can't simply grasp at once. I mean, it's like reading The Secret Doctrine of Blavatsky. You know, I've just recently reread it, and it's like over 25 years ago almost that I read it the first time.
Wow.
You know, or maybe 20 years, actually. And each time I read it, like, I understand more and grasp more of it, I mean, God, science, or my work generally, both God, science, and the secret doctrine, and the heart doctrine, it's hard for people to really grasp what is being suggested, because it's a higher dimensional model of the structure of human existence. And it's a whole alternate model. And I don't know enough, I don't know of any other author or speaker who is actually, or a physicist or scientist, who's actually saying that human beings actually have a zero point center. They talk about the zero point fields, because that's the new ideas about the nature of the quantum vacuum, how you have all these zero point fields for different forces of nature and so on, latent in space. But people don't come to the idea that living beings might actually have a zero-point center, a dynamic center, which is the life principle within the living being. Okay, and that, in a way, like in mysticism, life comes from above rather than from below.
Oh, yeah.
Scientists think that the consciousness evolves from material matter. That would be life evolving from below. But instead, mystical teachings and spiritual teachings say life comes from above, and then it is embodied into the physical to have certain lessons and to try to attain the soul and to go through different cycles of existence. So life comes from above, and so there's this living life center within the human heart. And it all makes total sense in terms of the enigmas of how the generation of the heart beat in science. I mean, it all makes perfect sense. That, you know, no one can explain how, on a material basis, how the heart generates the life impulse. And death comes when the heart ends, and that's what mystics say, and the self, the consciousness withdraws into the heart at death, and you go, yeah. So it makes so much sense of, it's already a complete enigma in modern science, like what is human consciousness and what is the self, if there is one. It's already a complete mystery. And then you have all these other enigmas in modern science, like the uncertainty principle and the issue of whether the universe will expand or contract, you know, or the issue of the nature of gravity and the issue of the nature of light. These are all kind of questions and issues, the origin of the solar system and the origin of humankind. These are all still questions in all areas of science. I've lost my track a little bit in what I was trying to say with that.
Well, I think what you were getting at was that this model provides provides an alternative conception in which these questions take on an entirely different meaning, because, you know, in modern science, in the materialist reductionist perspective that dominates modern science, these are all enigmas, because, I mean, the other one is life. I mean, the two fundamental mysteries that confront modern science is, how does life originate, and how does consciousness originate? And I mean, we have these pat explanations, and we have this unconvincing yet frequently invoked evidentiary basis that, you know, that it's possible for some sort of life to emerge from combinations of certain physical elements, and we make these huge jumps that somehow matter can produce consciousness. But when you stand it on it, that all these questions on their head, as you say, like in the mystical and esoteric perspective, life and consciousness come from above, so that they're stepped down through these different dimensions and manifest on the material planes, and within human beings. Human beings are ensouled and made conscious by these divine sparks within the heart, and emerge from these higher dimensions of consciousness and life. So, like, in a way, it's like, you know, if you think of the Big Bang, in which everything once existed in this compressed point, and then it exploded and is, you know, is continuing to expand. At one point, everything was unified. So, in a sense, it makes sense in a way to think that somehow everything is still related or interrelated, could be somehow resolved back into that point. And that's what the mystical higher dimensional perspective provides is a way for everything to have somehow still be related, and then you get into the whole
to remain
connected into and I think one of the big problems in modern science, which is sort of in physics, has been recognized, is that you have to have all these extra dimensions beyond the four-dimensional space-time continuum.
Yeah.
That simply we can describe all sorts of things, and we can manipulate all sorts of things within that realm completely accurately, so that we can, you know, we can send ships into space, and we can do all sorts of things on the material plane in terms of science and technology. But in terms of providing comprehensive explanations about the nature of reality, we have to recognize that there are dimensions beyond this, and that's why, as you often quote, I believe it was actually Heinz Pagel said that all of physics is in the quantum vacuum. It's like that we have to eventually deal with things in terms of providing an explanation by recognizing the importance of these higher dimensions. And yet, in the mystical perspective, it's always what's been described in general terms as the great chain of being has always been recognized, is that there's a hierarchy of world orders, and that the material plane is beneath these higher dimensions, even though the word higher is somewhat misleading, because it's not higher or lower, it's more internal in a way, but whatever, there's this hierarchy of different dimensions of consciousness and being, and that at the highest level everything is unified. And so in a way we are on our material plane, we are an expression of this higher dimension. We're informed by these higher dimensions and by this ladder of creation. And so somehow, in order to completely understand the nature of ourselves and the nature of our plane, we have to understand these higher dimensions and how they're related to the material plane. And that's what I think is missing in all of modern psychology. I don't think there's zero recognition of that. There's no attempt to really come to terms with that reality. And it's really been legislated out of psychology and arbitrarily dismissed. And within physics, I think that it's recognized to a much greater degree, but strictly in a material sense. And what the esoteric perspective provides is that spiritual aspect, which physics doesn't recognize, but which I think is clearly part of those higher dimensions. It's spirit, it's consciousness, it's intelligence, and even physics is coming, I think, to that viewpoint, that realizing that. And that's why, again, that's why your work is so interesting, because there are explanations in the esoteric teachings, but nobody seems to recognize how important they are and how germane they are to modern physics. And then in biology, you have the big problem of life. You know, again, because somebody can spark some methane ammonia, you know, create some basic building blocks, some amino acids and stuff. I mean, that's a Miller-Urey experiment in the 50s. Mm-hmm. It's a long way from that to explaining life as simply accidentally evolving out of matter. And even that doesn't really dismiss the idea of these higher dimensions informing the material process. You know, like, I mean, you can work on the mechanics of these things, but that still doesn't disprove or do away with the need to recognize these higher dimensions. So it's quite intriguing that the mystical perspective provides such a comprehensive explanation of things, and I think a much more compelling and coherent and reasonable explanation of things than anything in modern materialist science. It does, and the beauty of it is it doesn't invalidate modern materialist science, but it provides a greater explanatory framework, a more comprehensive explanatory framework.
Yeah. I mean, I think it shows a lot, all the mistakes that we've been making in modern thought. Like, mm-hmm. I was thinking of the like you're talking about the problem of God's contracting universe, and I was thinking about like the different stages that we both went through in exploring these areas, and we both began with the kind of study of the Gurdjieff fourth way teaching, and there you learned. I learned some things which, in a way, were so simple and yet so profound. Like, for instance, in psychology, I was an academic psychologist, and psychology was usually defined as the science of behavior and the mind. And I saw how psychology was so dualistic, always looking at human beings in dualistic ways. And then Gurdjieff explains that human beings are three-centered beings. They function mentally, emotionally, and physically. And that's a basic kind of triad, we thinking, feeling, and sensation and movement. So it's like we have this threefoldness. We have a mental body, an astral body, a physical body. There's that threefoldness to it. So, and then I could see how modern psychology, they have the head and the body, but they have no heart. In modern psychology, there's been no psychology of the heart. No one in psychology ever considers that the heart might actually be a place of experience and sentience and consciousness. Like, it's just not considered in that way. It's always assumed everything is up in the mind, in the head. So something so simple from the Gurdjieff teaching. And then how Gurdjieff says that consciousness has to be understood as something different from the psychic functions of thinking, feeling, and sensation, he said. So consciousness then is like a fourth element, and it's different from, it's not thinking, it's not feeling, it's not sensing. Consciousness is something more basic. It's like light, or it's a background against which you can be aware of thoughts and feelings and sensations. But thoughts and feelings and sensations are the contents of consciousness, whereas the consciousness is something distinct from those. So we had that basic learning, I think, Jim, in realizing, that we could see how Western psychology was all the time mistaking states of consciousness with the stream of thinking or the stream of mental activity, whereas Gurdjieff distinguished consciousness from the psychic functions. That was very valuable. That was like a first step towards, you know, more enlightened consciousness studies. And then it went on from there to kind of the studies of the heart doctrine and how central that is to the spiritual psychologies and religious teachings. And then it went from there to the zero point studies and that there's actual higher dimensional physics or science to the heart, that it's a zero point center. So there's been all those kind of different levels of unfolding of this. I guess we've been pursuing these issues of consciousness now in our lives and academically for over 30 years, trying to understand these things. And it's amazing that it's been an amazing process, and we've come to really quite an amazing understanding that, you know, it's a shame we can't convey it as it might be.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and as you say, it's the there are all these different elements that emerge from studying psychology and the psychology of consciousness from an esoteric perspective that are invisible within modern academic psychology, which was our background. And I mean, the most basic thing that when we first were introduced to the fourth way and to Gurdjieff and Uspensky is the idea that you should study consciousness and that you should study it within yourself and that you should study it systematically within yourself. And I mean, within psychology, we're taught that to be scientific, for something to be scientific, you had to study externally observable phenomena and you had to be able to somehow manipulate the variables that you were interested in order to produce an effect which other independent observers could also manipulate